Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Amy, well, look at this. Can't wait to see how this is covered. Axios reporting. Writers for a D.C.-based media operation run by prominent Democratic operatives are behind a sprawling network of ostensible local media outlets churning out Democratic-aligned news content in midterm battleground states.
Oh.
What? Wait, what?
Is this on?
Behind the patina of independent local news, these sites are pumping out content designed to put a sheen of original reporting on partisan messaging. A network of at least 51 locally branded news sites has popped up since last year under names like Milwaukee Metro Times, the Mecklenburg Herald, the Tri-City Record. The sites are focused on key swing states with elections in 21 and 22, Arizona, Colorado, Georgia, Michigan, New Hampshire, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Wisconsin. Oh, Local Report, Inc., which was formed in Florida last year, launched by Democrat operative and fundraiser David Brock.
Oh.
Media Matters is real. Anita Hill.
David Brock. Been a while.
Well, I cannot wait. I cannot wait for the Columbia Journalism Review, for David Greasing, for the Crane's Chicago Business, the anti-business business rag in the city, Greg Hines, Rich Miller, the Dana Kozlov, the entirety of the Chicago Press Corps to opine on this development. Wow, wow, wow.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also text us anytime by typing in 64636-DA, then your quick comment.
And with respect to the newspapers with which I'm affiliated that so many of you have received, after Jelly Belly demanded that the Paddock Publications, who owns the Daily Herald, stop printing them, and they agreed, I wonder if they'll print any of the Axios papers. I wonder what the governor thinks of that. Is that fake news? Lies, lies, lies by extremists? It's now been reported that the papers, we got a new printer. And guess who we replaced the Paddock Publications with now that it's out there in the public domain? Gannett, which is the largest local news publisher in the country. So we traded up from Paddock Publications to Gannett.
Oh, I'm surprised they took your business. I mean, I'm surprised Pritzker didn't pressure them to stay away from you. Even though he can't, I mean, he's a tyrant.
Didn't know about it yet. Now he knows about it because the D.C. Press Corps has been dutifully calling around to every publisher trying to find out where our papers are being published.
Don't they have anything better to do with
I wonder if they're doing anything with respect to the report that Axios has filed on the David Brock newspapers, Local Report, Inc. newspapers. How about it? Gannett spokesperson saying LGIS, the company, our commercial print client. They also print the Epoch Times, which the New York Times has labeled a leading purveyor of right-wing misinformation. Oh, of course. What about Local Report, Inc.? I guess David Brock will be knighted as a legitimate journalist. And so Local Report Inc., which is doing local news from a particular angle in swing states to affect policy and political outcomes, that's okay? I mean, I just cannot wait for the reporting on this from all of your friends in the Chicago Press Corps. I mean, I'm sure they're going to be Johnny on the spot. They're going to pick this ball up and run with it.
Don't be so sure. It is a Friday. They kind of check out right around now because they're done. They want to get to their second homes in Indiana or in Michigan or in Iowa and relax, decompress.
Well, they also need to start harassing Gannett, start pressuring Gannett. Enlist the governor to call on Gannett to stop printing us as well, right?
If Pritzker goes after Gannett, then that's the final straw. There have been a lot of final straws, and we'll go over his disgusting debate last night with Darren Bailey. But that would be then he can't stop himself.
Gannett owns a bunch of
everything,
a bunch of Illinois papers, the Canton Daily Ledger, local papers, the Journal Standard in Freeport. The State Journal Register in Springfield, Rockford Register Star, Pontiac Daily, Peoria Journal Star, Pekin Daily Times, Lincoln Courier, The Daily Republican in Marion, and so forth.
I worked for a Gannett TV station. They also own a bunch of TV's stations.
You'll never
smaller
work
markets.
For a Gannett news TV station again, now that you know they know you're affiliated with me.
My homeless friend.
Bill and Glenn Allen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, hi, Dan. I was just wondering, do you have a source, a voter's guide for us, somewhere where we can go, especially for, like, the judge races?
Yes.
Where they don't list party affiliation?
Well, they do.
I was just wondering, where
in the suburbs in Glen Ellyn they do. I mean, what judges are you voting for? You're voting for Supreme Court justices and, local judicial races on the ballot in DuPage County. They have party affiliation, don't they?
I'm not sure. I haven't really looked into it yet, but I'm just wondering if are there better judges? Do you have a source for which ones are the because not all Republicans are the same.
No,
and
I know, but
voting for one Republican.
No. But I mean, we're past the primary, so your voter guide is vote for people with an R next to their name.
There you
That's
go.
Your voter guide.
Well, I plan on that was without a doubt. I was wondering if there was
No,
is there a way to go for next year?
Is there a way to go
next year?
Next year, what do you mean? Like local races?
For local races or for anything for the next voting season.
Oh,
the next election, like 2024.
Well, let's.
What's a good source for, the primaries to find out who these people are, rather than just see the signs on the side of the road?
This show and the newspapers with which I'm affiliated, basically. That's what I would say. Thanks for the call, Bill. So that would be the DuPage Policy Journal in your neck of the woods.
But Channel 5 said that you weren't real newspapers.
I know. I wonder what they'll say about David Brock's papers.
I just still can't believe she did that.
Not real newspapers.
Not real. They just made this declarative statement, and then that statement was put into a campaign flyer that went out to every house.
I just wonder. I'm sure the press corps is going to follow up on this Axios report. I mean, that's a fellow traveler, Axios. They're breaking from the pack a little bit here. Must be disconcerting. I'm sure there's going to be follow-up and inquiry in the direction of Pritzker and everybody else, their own news stations, their own newsrooms, all of the print newsrooms, right? Newsrooms in quotation marks. Right? We're going to hear from them on David Brock's local, what's it called?
Local Report, Inc.?
Local Report, Inc., yeah. We're going to hear from them, right? They're going to opine on this. Is this fake news, misinformation by extremists?
Are they going to go after his printer and make sure that they can discontinue their relationship with him?
Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan Ramey, and thank you, Dan, for taking my call. Listen, I heard you the other day when you basically had that interview with that David Greasy Liar.
Yeah, Better Government Association. I can't wait to hear what they have to say about David Brock's Local Report, Inc.
Oh, That was so good. Now, listen, other radio hosts, conservative radio hosts, are going to have to do that, try to challenge these people and get them on so they can do the same thing and expose these the way they lie and twist everything up and everything. But I'll tell you what, it's going to be hard to keep up with these. I can't believe how many of these organizations or whatever, how many of these different people can keep getting all this stuff going with all their lies. Because they can't deal with the truth. Like, well, you have the truth coming out, and they come after you like this, and that you just need to take and put it out that way. Just say, hey, I'm telling the truth. You're lying. Come on, chat. Let's have a debate. Let's take and get on and have a get on the show here. And you just have to expose them that way.
Thanks for the call, Craig. Well, here's the other thing about it. A couple of things you learn from this. One is the vast phalanx of nonprofits that the left has underwritten. That we haven't paid enough attention to. I mean, this is sort of like what Soros has done with local prosecutors. While he was doing it, we were sort of asleep at the switch, and all of a sudden we wake up and we've got people like Kim Fox and Larry Krasner and George Gasson in important positions in big cities and counties bringing about the lawlessness that we've been describing for the better part of the last 2 years. That's number one. Number two, it's a reminder for Republicans. You're supposed to be, particularly when you're up against a Democrat socialist power structure as we are in Illinois, you can be a Republican, okay? You can affiliate with the Republican Party. The Republican Party can exist, much like the Washington Generals can exist. You're supposed to play your part. You're supposed to be a good, housebroken Republican like Mitt Romney that stays within the accepted boundaries of what Republicans are allowed to say. If you want to talk about marginal tax rates, that's fine. If you want to put out some mailers that say, I'm for low taxes and they're for high taxes, yeah, that's fine. But, you know, you start doing anything that really challenges the fundamental premises from which they operate, that exposes how craven and dishonest they are in great detail, you start making actual arguments that they have to defend, then it's time to shut it down. No. Now you're coloring outside the lines. Get back within the lines, get back in your crib, and, you know, you be a good little boy and a good little girl, you Republicans. That's why we're getting the response that we're getting, is because we're not behaving like the docile Republicans are supposed to behave. And in this state, have for the most part, for the better part of the last 40 years. Michael Southside.
Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. Thank you for taking my call. Dan, you can redeem yourself and your newspapers very easily. I just want to run a review of the new gay rom-com movie.
If I did, if I gave a thumbs up to, no pun intended, to bros, you think that would put me back in good standing? Do you,
yeah.
Michael? Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Last night in Illinois State University, sponsored by Nexstar, was the first gubernatorial debate between Governor Spaulding and State Senator Darren Bailey. For those of you who watch it, please weigh in on your reviews, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
I was flipping back and forth between the Kanye West interview with Tucker Carlson and then got sucked into the debate, and then I couldn't stop watching it. I thought Darren Bailey destroyed Governor Pritzker, because for the first time, you guys got to see the bull jive that he's been telling reporters for 3 years, not answering questions, but it was on full display for everybody to see now. Everybody was at our press conference yesterday.
Your buddy there, one of the Bouvier sisters, Mary Ann Ahern, she tweeted out midway through the debate, the first half of the debate, she thought Bailey won, which
is shocking.
I don't know what she thought about the second half in totality. But
second half, she said he won, too, because he did.
And here's the thing. This is what's dangerous when you underestimate your opponent. Sort of like what we talked about with respect to Biden before the first debate with Trump in 2020. You don't want to minimize your opponent before you confront him. You want to suggest that your opponent maybe is better than he actually is. So you play, you control the expectations game. And because Bailey has been caricatured by the Democrat socialists in this state as some sort of backward hillbilly who doesn't know up from down, the expectations for him, I think, were quite low going into this. And I think he exceeded them because they were set so low. I think he more than held his own with the governor, and him more than holding his own with the governor is a win because it makes it say, well, wait a second. This guy is competent. This guy knows as much as J.B. Pritzker. So this guy can do the job. Now, if I'm a little bit disgusted with J.B. Pritzker's performance and where Illinois finds itself after 4 years of him at the helm, then maybe this Darren Bailey, this farmer from Southern Illinois, is not so bad. Maybe he is a safe place to land, as Charles Thomas says in the commercial that I've got running now. Charles Thomas, former ABC political reporter. A farmer from Southern Illinois? You know, he says it the way that a lot of people are saying it. Like, that's a ridiculous notion. And then he backs it up, cool, like Charles does it. Yeah. Yeah, a farmer from Southern Illinois.
Darren Bailey, he went through the same hardships that we went through. And it was so apparent yesterday. Pritzker, once again, and I know we're going to get into the Safety Act. We talk about it every day, which we should. But he couldn't name any specific changes he'd make to the Safety Act. He did the same song and dance routine. But Bailey, when he talked about our children, he's talking about all of our children.
Well, we should never have shut down. Our education system is a national embarrassment. Our children can't read and do math at grade level. The overwhelming majority of children in Chicago public school systems can't read and do math at grade level. The Wall Street Journal just gave us an F. I'll fire the entire State Board of Education and Dr. Carmen Ayala. I'll make sure that we have local control, and I'll make sure the parents' voices are heard.
Thank you.
I'll fully fund schools on time every year, and that will include instruction on trades and vocational skills. I will get rid of CRT. I'll get rid of the egregious gender curriculum that J.B. Pritzker has put in our schools. And unlike Governor Pritzker, I'll keep the schools open, and I'll make sure that parents have choice from
Senator,
competition.
Senator
I thought he was great. I mean, he just hammered him home. Pritzker sitting there like a lost puppy.
That was a moment in the debate, and Pritzker's response is important, too, specific to that Wall Street Journal editorial that we discussed earlier this week, which was recounting information that was provided by research done by WirePoints, our friends at WirePoints, Mark Glenn and Ted Dabrowski, who you hear from weekly on this show. And this is what Pritzker does in response to unacceptable truth.
I can't wait.
He talks about what was in the Wall Street Journal. That was provided to them by a right-wing carnival barker organization here in the state of Illinois.
Of course.
Yeah, right. If you operate with unacceptable truths as opposed to the acceptable lies that we tell ourselves, so many of us do in this state, then you're a right-wing carnival barker, you're extremist. In point of fact, these stats, which are devastating, end of civilization stats, 36% of third graders in Illinois, that's 2.1 million kids in K-12. Only 36% of third graders read at grade level. And as the journal opined, if you can't read at grade level in third grade, you can't do word problems in fourth grade. And
it's
so on and so forth. Right. So once you fall behind, many never catch up. That data, 36% read at grade level in third grade, 27% for Latino students, 22% for Black students. That data is verbatim from the Illinois State Board of Education. So it's not right-wing carnival barker organizations. It's the right-wing carnival barker state agency to which Pritzker makes appointments, the Illinois State Board of Education. And that should be clarified. And I know WirePoints will clarify it, but it's something the media should clarify at all as well, because it speaks to the devastating reign of terror on kids under this governor and so many previous governors and previous general assemblies, because you don't get to schools that are this bad in 4 years. You exacerbate the problem, which he's most certainly done, by the way.
With the lockdowns, yes.
Parenthetical remark. Those numbers are pre-pandemic. Those are 2019 numbers. So you can bet they have gotten worse. Yes. They have deteriorated over the last 3 years. Right-wing carnival barkers, right-wing extremists, insurrectionists, Trump voters, that's all they have. They cannot deal on the merits because they have accomplished so little. They have done so much harm. And that was a good illustration of it. If he gets away with that response, well, that's just another example of the failed institution that is the Fourth Estate in Illinois. Jeff in Cal City, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to watch the debate. I was working.
That's what YouTube's
for. When I came
for.
Home, I caught it on, I caught it on the 10 o'clock news. And I know it's just a silly question, but why wasn't Darren Bailey wearing a red tie? I looked at him and I saw JB, and they're both like wearing the exact same tie. It was disgusting.
I didn't even notice that.
Jeff.
I don't know. I don't think Darren Bailey owns a lot of ties, first of all.
I don't think
he has the same choices in the closet that Jelly Belly has, but no, I don't know. I know it's like that matters to some people. I really don't pay attention to it. I'd like glasses, the frames on his glasses should be, what your hairstyle should be.
Let him be him.
Yeah, cut of your suit and all that. I mean, you know, I'm trying to deal on the substance of things. But, you know, I understand presentation is important, but I why did they wear the same color tie? I don't know. It was blue night in Normal. I don't know. all right, let's get to the Safety Act, too, because yes. This dominated the first almost quarter of the debate. And here's what JB reiterated. You've heard him say it before, but here's what he reiterated in defense of his purge law.
The criminal justice system that Darren Bailey and Republicans are standing up for is one that allows murderers and rapists and domestic abusers to buy their way out of jail. And that's unsafe for our families, for our neighborhoods, and frankly, victims' rights organizations are supportive of the Safety Act.
Mm-hmm.
Darren Bailey is a hypocrite on this subject. I mean, he has voted against all of these things, and he even voted to defund police.
Bailey should have been more on point on that. He did talk about legislation he sponsored that would provide more funding than was provided in Pritzker's budget. But he should also say this is a good example of how JB misrepresents the truth. I voted against JB Pritzker's budget because it was bloated. And it has the wrong spending priorities and so forth. Make your case against his budget and include it. So if you vote against my budget, then you vote against everything in it, including some level of police funding. That is misleading. It's disingenuous. He sponsored legislation himself that would have provided more funding. He should have explained that. So I just wanted to clarify that. JB keeps with this, you know, all these rich violent criminals that are buying their way out of jail, which is not happening, and nor is the mom who steals diapers and formula for her kids.
He brought it up again last night.
That's the entire prison population, J.B. Pritzker would have you believe, when in fact it's also zero. This is just, you know, a purposeful agitprop by Pritzker. But he was pushed, to their credit, by the two GN reporters on changes he would make in the face of the hue and cry from prosecutors and law enforcement alike.
She was an anchor from Champaign, but she was good. I loved her.
Here's what he said.
Governor, this is your chance now. What specific changes would you make to the Safety Act?
Well, I think that there are clarifications. People, you know, as you know, the Republicans have put out a lot of disinformation, a whole list of things that they say are non-detainable offenses. There's no such thing under the Safety Act as non-detainable offenses. And again, the goal of it is to keep murderers, rapists, domestic abusers, violent criminals in jail, and a poor young mother who shoplifts diapers and formula.
Governor Pritzker, one more chance.
Kept
are
in
you,
for months
Governor Pritzker,
if she doesn't have the $500
the base, are you willing to answer the question? One specific change you would make?
Again, I think there are clarifications that can be made in the law to make sure that everyone understands what this law
we're
is.
We're
going to
move
about.
On. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she tried. That's welcome to our world.
Well, that's fine. When you don't offer something specific, even, and you just use, again, vague generalities like clarifications that need to be made so people understand it. Oh, really? So 100 of 102 county prosecutors, they don't understand it. Former police chiefs, county sheriffs, they don't understand it. Nobody understands it. Nobody in law enforcement understands it. The guy who's never had a job.
Never had a J-O-B, folks. Let that sink in.
That guy is the one who understands it. Yeah. Bailey, I thought, had his best moment of the night very early on when he responded to what you just heard from Pritzker on his purge law.
Governor Pritzker is obviously lying about everything that he just said. And I think it's very interesting that 100 of the 102 state's attorneys across the state, a third of them being Democrats, are standing up against this as well. I think it's obvious that's why I have the full support of the police on this deal, because they know exactly what this does. The Safety Act must be repealed because it lets violent criminals and murderers out of jail before trial. Now, Governor Pritzker could have proposed bail reform for nonviolent criminals. I would have supported that, but he didn't. Instead, he signed a bill that's attaching revolving doors to every jail in the state of Illinois. And friends, we're going to have the exact same problem across the state that Chicago is experiencing after January 1st.
And this simple question that he asked too.
Did the police not know what they're talking about?
Yeah, do the police not know what they're talking about, but this guy does? Is that what you believe? Let's go to calls. Chet and Lyle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Circle the date, October 27th. That's when the next 2022 information from the Illinois report card drops. So it'll be interesting to see if the trend continues. I know out here in Lyle there has been emails circulating showing the drop in performance of students. Here, like over the last 10 years, and if you start comparing school districts, because every school district is compared the same, has to populate the same data and so forth, it is really, really frightening when you start looking at overall trends. So thank you to your mention on the IRC. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks, Chet. Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys. I didn't catch much of the debate. I caught a few clips, but sounded like Bailey did well, and I'm glad he was able to hold his own up there, and I'm glad he's showing some strong messaging. I'm just disappointed in the rest of the party down ticket. I'm seeing these ads against Judge Mary Kay O'Brien, who I guess is a Democrat judge, and I'm glad that the Republicans are running ads against her, but the problem is they're trying to attach her to Mike Madigan. Didn't somebody tell these people that Mike Madigan left the chessboard like 2 years ago and you could stop running those stupid ads attacking Madigan? Nobody cares anymore. And then out my
district. That's a good point. Those ads are being run by this guy, Nick Klitzing, who for some reason people gave money to do the Supreme Court races. He mucked up the primary, and there is I'll just give you a little inside baseball. There is more coming, more support coming for the Republican candidates for Supreme Court, because those are important races. And the job that Nick Klitzing is doing, who's, by the way, a Rauner holdover. You know, so the same guys that gave you Rauner, the same guys that gave you Richard Irvin, Nick Klitzing's part of that crew. And they're doing the same old thing they always do. They're being good House Progen Republicans, as I was talking about before, coloring within the lines that the Democrats set so that they can lose elections with what they think is honor. But so I agree with you about those ads, and better ones are coming.
Yeah, I figured it was some rhino, Pat Brady, or somebody that had their hands all over that. And the one last point I wanted to make is out here in the, I believe it's still called the 14th. I'm in Underwoods District. And Scott Grider, I'm just not seeing it, man. I'm not seeing much of a ground game, not seeing much as far as social media following. And I know social media doesn't win elections, but when you just look at his page, instead of, he's not talking about the border, he's not talking about any of the economic calamities around the world, any of the foreign policy blunders. He's saying, happy Hispanic Heritage Month. Well, nobody cares, Scott. If you think you're going to win, do you think you're a knockoff Underwood, who is a strong and disciplined incumbent, as much as I hate to say it, but do you think he's going to knock her off by posting yard signs and shaking hands with old ladies at the Lions Club? He's going to lose, and it's not really going to be close.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Well, that race was within the margin of error, mainly because of the district and the year. So there's definitely a pickup opportunity there. But I agree with you that Greider needs to be more aggressive and on message, on substantive things, not just, you know, I'm a nice guy, don't be afraid of me kind of bull crap. Ron, Carol Stream.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, if you could just confirm for me what the numbers I'm hearing for in the 30s for kids able to read at grade level in the 30s, that's for the state, right?
That's the state. Oh, yeah. I mean, there are school districts. So, we've reported on that right-wing Carnival Bark organization has reported on that are much lower than that.
Dan, you got to stop barking. Anyway, so the suburban districts in the single digits. So then how is it in the 30s except when it has to be downstate districts that are bringing that average up? No.
No, I mean, the suburban districts aren't in the 30s. The suburban districts, I mean,
No. I'm saying in single digits. Suburban, like Elgin?
Some of them. Like Elgin was 11% of Latino students in Elgin at the read at third grade level. Third graders read at third grade level.
Right. That's where my wife works as an IT professional. So I just think if it's only if it's in the 30s and there are all these single digits or 11%, there's got to be somewhere where that's bringing that 30% average up.
Well, yeah. And thanks for the call, Ron. You know where it is. It's in the rich areas. I mean, let's just be honest about it. And some of the middle income areas, too. But it's in the wealthier areas in the suburbs. That's what's bringing the average up into the mid 30s. Of course, that's the case. When you have places like Decatur, where it's 1% of third graders, black third graders who do math at grade level, 2% of black third graders who read at grade level. Yeah, of course, somewhere's bringing it up a little bit, even though it's still end of civilization numbers. I mean, there's not enough emphasis put upon it. I don't think there's enough emphasis that can be put upon it. The disaster that is coming if you don't have a full reversal on how we do K-12 education so that kids are reading and doing math at grade level and are on the path to being successful independent adults in whatever their chosen course of endeavor. Karen Beecher.
Good morning, darlings. Don't hate me for this, but my first degree was in theater before I got into education.
I don't hate you for that so far. Yeah.
And actually, I got my degree from ISU.
Oh, boy. Mm. All right, go Redbirds.
Yeah. A lot of famous alum there.
So I look at body language and physical posturing. So, I mean, and I was listening to the words as well. But, Darren, I wanted to rip that tie off because it just felt like it was choking him. I didn't care about the color, but I wanted that tie off. And Darren really impressed me because of how well he stood straight and he had his body open. He was facing the audience. He was facing JB. JB was really clutching that podium thing and writing his fake little notes. And that smarmy smirk, I wanted to slap JB's dirty face with that smarmy smirk of his. And if he said liar one more time, I don't know.
He just assumed that he was entitled to go unchallenged on everything. Well, so I'm with you there on that smirk on his face.
To be fair, since he's a physical impossibility, that steel-reinforced podium he was clutching was the only thing keeping him upright.
He could have cracked a femur last night. He was on his feet for so long.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy, continuing our postmortem on last night's first gubernatorial debate. Took place at Illinois State University in Normal and was broadcast by, sponsored by Nexstar, saw it on WGN. the end of the debate. We'll get to the more substantive policy stuff in a moment, but let's start with the end of the debate. It's one of these types of questions I loathe, the boxers or briefs type questions that try to humanize these cardboard cutout human beings.
Deep dish or thin pizza, yeah.
More normally, and you get cardboard cutout human being answers.
But this one was good.
So this, this was the closing question. It was from the center fielder for the Illinois State University baseball team. And he said, you know, look, we get walk-up songs. We get to choose our walk-up song when we come to bat. See, the major league level. It's down at the collegiate level, too, in case you didn't know.
Right. Well, and some people don't know what it is.
So they were asked, what would your walk-up song be if you were a center fielder for Illinois State University, for example?
Well, any song that highlights the big things that need to get done for our state is what I would suggest should be the walk-up song. We've gotten so many done over the last 4 years.
All right.
I hope
he couldn't
we'll
come up with a song.
Over the next
I love that girl, Jen. He couldn't come up with a song. Calling him up. Well, I mean, what kind of man are you? He probably doesn't even know what a walk-up song is. I bet you he doesn't.
Any song that would highlight the big things we've done in Illinois. There's a big lover of music. I mean, that is exactly the kind of cardboard cutout human being answer you would expect from a vacuous buffoon.
Has he not lived?
Like J.B. Pritzker. He's the same kind of, the sort of response I think you expect from a man who would try to blame his wife for pulling toilets out of his house to evade property taxes. Hide behind his wife. That's the sort of answer you get. So we need some help for the governor. What should J.B. Pritzker's walk-up song be?
312-642-5600, our turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach out and please text us at 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Now, Darren Bailey was then asked his walk-up song, and he was at the ready.
I may seem a little different than some of you.
No.
I'm a hard-working man because these young people, I'm going to preserve a future for these young people, and I am going to represent every hard-working person out there.
That's Brooks and Dunn, right? Hard-working man.
Yeah, we have it, I think. Have you heard it? You dabble in some country. We'll get it. You'll hear it later. Be on your iTunes later.
All right, so I guess we'll indulge, because I know you want to. Indulge what... Amy, what's your walk-up song?
Oh, no. You first. What is the Dan Proft walk-up song?
I have it.
Okay. I can't wait. Your karaoke song when you win the 5K.
Gets you in that zen space. It's a plaintive wail for the truth, and then I slap a liner down the third base line because I'm all jacked up. I'm a little bit more effete than Darren Bailey. He's a farmer. Here's his song. No, that's Rush. Oh, I think he's a little bit more country. That's Eric Thomas, our engineer, saying, putting his own spin on Darren Bailey's song because he's a Geddy Lee guy. But Darren Bailey is a country guy.
We didn't mean that song.
No, well, he knows.
Yeah, he knows.
Fine. All right, that's fine. Rush would be good too. I love Rush.
Yeah,
I saw them at MGM in Vegas. Great.
Really?
And that was before Neil Peart, I think. Goodness, because that was an awesome show. Anyway, I digress. Still looking for...
Songs for Pritzker.
Song for Pritzker, right? What would be his walk-up music? Do you have your walk-up music?
I have mine.
What is it?
I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
Not bad.
Crazy train.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
Life is a crazy train, man.
Yeah. You could be an honorary Osborne. All right. I have the definitive walk-up song for J.B. Pritzker, but I won't ruin it for our listeners. Okay. I'll wait for my turn. We'll take some calls.
And we'll hear suggestions. 312-642-5600. We can help him out because the next debate's in a few weeks, and what if a similar question's asked? He's got to have something in his pocket.
Eduardo Midway.
Yeah, I thought Mr. Bailey won the debate talking about the economy and crime, but he could have gone for another hour. My song for him is, for Mr. Pritzker, is Thompson Twins Lies.
Oh, that's good. Yeah,
how
that's
does that go? One. Eduardo, can you sing it for us?
Oh, please. Yeah. Oh, you wanted
just,
to hum a few bars.
Come on, Eduardo.
Lies, lies. That's the whole song. It's just lies, lies, lies. There's really, not, yeah. there's really no lyrics. They're just lies, lies, lies. That's all it is.
You could also yeah. go, you know, I mean, same genre, same category. You could go with Fleetwood Mac's Tell Me Lies, Tell Me Sweet Little Lies. Because that's what we really do here. We accept these sweet little lies, the acceptable lies, I call them, from these politicians.
Tell me lies,
there you go.
Tell me sweet little lies.
All of you got to hear the sweet little lies yesterday, too.
By the way, Stevie Nicks, she was just here.
She was at Ravinia, yeah.
Yeah, and people said she's still, like, she still rocks it. She's got to be 70.
She is 70.
Early
she's,
70s.
Yeah. Son of a Sinner by Jelly Roll.
Tony and Park Ridge, what are you talking about?
Well, somebody's there.
Texting?
Texting.
Oh, so you're just throwing out songs.
No lyrics. Definitive song. Baby Elephant Walk.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call, Tony.
How does that go?
Bill, LaSalle County.
Hi. Two things. Number one, Pritzker, when he's throwing all his money around, his money talks from AC/DC. And in his mind, he also thinks he's got the biggest balls.
He's got big balls. She's got the biggest balls of them all.
He's got the biggest balls of them all.
Well, we know who has the biggest joint, and that's Lori Lightfoot.
Well, that's, come on. Mm-hmm. Guys, don't even touch that subject. She wins, hands down. It's been decided.
David Winnetka.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm going with a more traditional baseball-themed Harry Carey classic. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts, because I'm an elephant. I can barely reach my crack.
Okay, David, I don't know about
some more
that.
Text messages. Hit the road, Jack.
I don't think that's what he would choose to be his walk-up song. But,
take
that's
this
okay.
job and shove it.
Uh-huh.
And Loser by Beck.
Soy un perdedor. I'm a loser baby. John in Crown Point.
Hey, guys. Love your show. Love Amy more. Hey, I got a great song. That Queen song, Fat Bottom Girls.
You make my rockin' world go
fat
round.
Fat bottom girls make the da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, you gonna let thanks it for the call, all hang John. Out. Fat bottom girls, you make the rockin' world go round.
That's all we get? That's all we get of Fat Bottom Girls?
I'm dancing over here, Eric.
Encore. Yeah. All right, you want me to give you the answer on Jelly Belly's walk-up song?
Yeah, you're teasing it to death. I'm dying over here. What is it?
Eat it, eat it. Get yourself an egg and beat it. Have some more chicken, have some more pie. It doesn't matter if it's one more fries. Just eat it, eat it, just eat it. Eat it. Just eat it, just eat it. Your table manners are a crying shame. You're playing with your food to send some kind of game. Now if you starve to death, you'll just have yourself to blame. So eat it, just eat it.
Yeah, I think that. I think it captures his essence, don't you? All right, let's get to some of these other substantive issues.
Wait,
now that we've...
Still, like Land of Confusion by Genesis?
No.
Bruce Springsteen's I'm Going Down. I'm going down, down, down. Yeah, but these are songs he wouldn't choose for himself.
Well, he wouldn't choose Eat It for himself either.
No,
I don't
think
so. That's still fair game. Yeah. Alex in Baltic, Ohio.
Hey, Dan and Amy. It's Alistair. How you doing?
Oh, hey.
I'm thinking Pritzker's theme song should be the Sanford and Son theme song. That's his walk-up, because after everybody's left Illinois, it's just going to be a junkyard.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Hey, give me the big one.
Come on, Elizabeth. I'm coming. I love Sanford and Son.
Great. Red Fox was the best. And so was Toni Preckwinkle in that. She was great as Red Fox's, as Fred Sanford's friend.
Brady.
Yeah. She's awesome in that. John in Naperville.
Yeah, because JB is asking an Illinois voter to do this for him for years. The song called Blow Me by Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis.
All right, John. Mike in Union. Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on?
Hello.
How about the Fat Albert walk-up song from the cartoon? I don't know if you remember watching it as a kid. Yeah, I mean, that would be perfect. You know, boom, 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 all the way up to the plate. That's only fitting. There you go.
Hey, it's Fat Albert.
And yeah.
Song for you. Oh, my God, I can't remember this.
And Bill's gonna show you a thing or two.
Remember this?
You'll have some fun now with me and all the gang. Learning from each other while we do our thing.
Nah, nah, nah. Gonna have a good time.
It's too upbeat.
Gonna have a good time.
But I would say, JB, you're like school on a holiday. No class. Yeah, man. All right, man. Yeah, man.
Then he did this. Remember when he did this?
That's rerun from What's Happening. You can't even tell the difference between a sitcom and a cartoon. Oh, my gosh.
Rerun. Oh, I loved Rerun.
He's great.
Is he still alive?
Rerun, Raj, Dwayne, I think they're all still with us.
Good.
I miss them terribly.
We should do the reboot on that. Probably they couldn't.
Linda in Homer Glen.
Yeah, hi. I have a great song for Darren Bailey.
Okay.
It's called Country On, and it's by Luke Bryan, and it's a great video, too. It would be perfect for him.
All right. It's better than that Rush song that he chose. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Linda.
Get the real song in, Eric. Eric was in for George, who's in for Justin Kosick. It's a long story.
We got a deep bench.
Yeah.
Eric in Rolling Meadows.
Hey, how about the Simpsons theme song? Springfield, you know, that big old cartoon, right?
Yeah, it's not bad. Thanks for the call, Eric. And we've got Homer as a governor. Well, a Marxist Homer, but a Homer nonetheless. Victoria in McHenry.
Hi, good morning. I think Taxman for Pritzker.
That's a good one.
By the Beatles.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thanks for the call, Victoria. Craig Burr Ridge.
The song that describes J.B. Pritzker to a T would be Liar by Rollins Band.
Wow. A Henry Rollins Band fan. Wow.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of those. All right. Thanks for the call, Craig. Not bad. Phil, Seven Bridges. Hey, Phil. Phil.
Phil.
Phil. Phil, Seven Bridges. Did he fall off one of them? All right. We'll hold. We'll see if Phil gives it. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Okay, number one would be, which was a song that, from what I understand, opened up in Normal, Illinois years ago, I Ran by Flock of Seagulls, which describes what you'd want to do when you see him and what you want to do with the state of Illinois. You want to run.
Mm-hmm.
Take My Breath Away by Berlin, I think.
Oh, you take that was, my breath
can imagine,
away.
Can you imagine him coming up to that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, can you imagine that one of him coming up to the stage? And then, of course, we could just do the crowd chant in the movie Stand By Me when they're doing the pie-eating contest. And I'll leave it at that.
Flock of Seagulls, not a one-hit wonder. Often, thanks for the call, Frank.
People
often
think that.
Often one-hit wonder, you know, the other great Flock of Seagulls song.
I have it on my iTunes. Stand by while I check my iTunes.
No, we're not standing
no.
by. Space Age Love Song.
Space Age, I love Space Age Love Song.
Berlin, also not a one-hit wonder. Take My Breath Away.
You take my breath away.
The terror. What is that? That is no.
All the magic in
is that a new arrangement?
That's only none of it will do.
I mean, how does that?
That.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Oh, I'm singing another different Take My Breath Away.
Well, this is the one everybody knows,
okay.
So I don't know what the one you're singing is.
This is from Top Gun, right?
Yes.
I did know
the movie about Tom Cruise dealing with the sexuality. Take My Breath Away, not the only hit, though, for Berlin.
What else?
You should know another one. You're a child, an adult of the 80s.
I was too self-absorbed. What?
No More Words.
No more words.
No more words. Telling me something while you're walking away.
Oh.
Yeah.
No more words. And empty promises.
Yeah, that one. That's a good one. Tom
would fit.
Tom in Chesterton.
Great. Thank you.
Tom in Chesterton. Stop talking to your barista. Talk to us.
Hey, that was the McDonald's driver.
Oh, okay. I was close.
Person in the morning.
All right. Yeah.
Eating healthy. Going for,
you got it. Rolling down the river, CCR. We're going down the river in Illinois.
I thought maybe somebody would come up with Highway to Hell. Jerry, Melrose Park.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Perfect song for Pritzker, Johnny Paychecks. Take this job and shove it.
All right. There you go, Jerry. Mike, West Bend.
Yep. How about Don't Stand So Close to Me?
The Police. Love it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. Jeff Rockford.
I'd like to suggest Candyman by Sammy Davis Jr.
Who can make the sun run? Wrinkle it, ugly. Remember last year, or 2 years ago, he bought almost $800 worth of fudge for
Who
his
staff? Who can make the sun rise? Wrinkle it with you.
Here's the thing about JB. It's tough to get your arms around him, both literally and figuratively. The figuratively part is because he is not a good person, but he comes across as this, you know, affable, fat and jolly. That's right. And so he's sort of like the clown in It. You think it's just for, you know, entertainment, but he's actually quite a diabolical figure. And it was interesting because this is the path that Bailey chose in his clothes yesterday.
I may seem a little different than some of you. I got a downstate twang, and sometimes I get a little too passionate about what's going on in this state. But this man is dangerous.
Ugh, oh, loved it.
Steve Elgin. Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. How are you guys doing?
Good.
What about Don't Want to Be a Fat Man by Jethro Tull?
Pretty good.
I don't know that song at all.
Thanks for the call. Well,
do I know that song?
Oh, I think he was going to sing a few bars.
Yeah, why did you hang up on him?
Because I didn't want him to sing a few bars. Dennis in DeKalb.
Yeah, hey, guys. Love your show. There was a Doors parody song out there, Food Came Through the Other Side. I don't know if you ever heard that.
I don't remember that one. I'd like to hear it.
It's awesome.
All right.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right. Thanks for the call. We'll put Eric on the search for Food Came Through the Other Side. That sounds like a song I could get behind, if you know what I mean.
I'm a hard-working man. I wear a steel hard hat. I can ride rope, a hammer and paint. Do things with my hands that most men can't.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We brought you this story last week about the PPP loans, the Paycheck Protection Program loans during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
Per data published by the SBA, Small Business Administration, we over at Chicago City Wire looked at how many loans, how much in terms of dollars. Around Chicagoland, and it was somewhat striking, certain neighborhoods. For example, in West Garfield Park, there were 6,282 PPP loans totaling more than $120 million that were issued last year. That is one PPP loan for every three adult residents of the West Garfield Park neighborhood.
Oh, my God.
Hmm.
That's a lot of businesses.
Average payout, $20,000. By comparison, for example, on the Chicago's north side, the PPP loans per person was 1 in 31. The south side, it was 1 in 12. But in places like West Garfield Park, Dalton, Inglewood, Austin, University Park in Will County, 1 in 4, 1 in 3, 1 in 4. A lot of these south and west side neighborhoods and south suburbs have a very low, a very, I mean, however you want to say it, very high loan per adult resident rate. In other words, a much greater percentage of the adult residents of those neighborhoods got PPP loans than elsewhere. Now, as I said, when we reported it, you can explain that by saying, well, there's less bigger businesses, traditional businesses in some of those neighborhoods and communities. And so you have more LLCs and independent contractors, one-off shops. Okay, maybe. We also know, though, from the city of Joliet, the police department there, you had inmates using PPP money to post bond. I don't think that's what the PPP program was for.
No, I don't either. Yeah.
Also this, you know, we brought you number 44 yesterday, the 44th person in Chicago accused of killing or shooting or attempting to kill or shoot someone while awaiting trial for an unrelated felony. That's just this year, number 44. He was arrested and charged with West Garfield Park, ironically, drive-by shooting and armed robbery in 2016. He posted $1,500 and was released. Drive-by shooting and armed robbery, $1,500, not bad. He allegedly shot one man in the head and another man in the face during a party in West Garfield Park. Both men are dead. So he was bonded out at $1,500 on electronic monitoring for a drive-by shooting and armed robbery. That was 6 years ago. And he then shot and killed two people, allegedly. Why do I bring him up again? Because he was also the beneficiary of a PPP loan.
Oh, no. Well, how much did he get?
Cross River Bank made, New Jersey-based Cross River Bank made the $20,833 PPP loan to this guy whose name I'm not going to say because he doesn't deserve the notoriety.
Okay.
On March of last year, March 23rd of last year, to be precise. He claimed to be the only employee of his own performing arts company, a sole proprietorship.
And they let that slide. They just handed him the money without checking to see if that's
now,
legit. He's the only employee? What?
Now, I suppose you can
maybe
be
a clown performing.
You could be a violent repeat felon and some a lover of the arts. I mean, I guess those two things are technically not mutually exclusive. So he could be a performance artist or a sponsor of performing artists, perhaps a mentor to performing artists, when he is not shooting people. It's possible. I think it's unlikely, though.
Yeah, I'm
I was talking to some friends at Signature Bank yesterday at this luncheon, and they were saying, you know, the government, SBA, is starting to look at some of these loans, so we'll see if they, you know, materially claw back any loans that were made improperly, you know, not in compliance with the strictures of the PPP loan, the intentions of that program.
Yeah, for instance, not owning a company, faking that you own a company.
For instance. But I wouldn't be too sanguine about the prospect that the SBA or the DOJ is going to recover a lot of the funny money that was printed up and misspent, whether by politicians or by fraudsters. For more on the topic, he's written about the fraudsters. Pleased to be joined again by James Bovard, member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, frequent contributor to The Hill, and contributing editor for American Conservative as well. James, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
How $600 billion was stolen from the American people. I remember when that was a lot of money. That's how old I am, James.
Yeah, that's going back to the 1960s almost. Yeah, it's fascinating how these programs were actually designed in order to practically maximize looting. And folks should not forget that the whole reason for the program is it was to compensate people for the freedoms that the politicians destroyed with the lockdowns and all the other bizarre edicts that came out at the start in the first couple of years of the pandemic. And it was, you know, it was also a way to buy votes. There were a lot of politicians were really brazen about that. But if you look at how the PPP program was designed, it was an honor system that just basically threw money at anybody who claimed that they had a business, and there was no verification. It was the same kind of Congress and the Trump and then the Biden administration were doing the same thing with government spending here that the U.S. government did in Afghanistan. It was called a burn rate, and you just burn through the money as fast as possible and presume it's going to solve all your problems.
Well, how many people were indicted and how many have been convicted?
Around 1,500 have been indicted so far. I think around 500 convictions so far. There's going to be a whole lot more, but for instance, the folks at the SBA with these PPP loans, the SBA has got 2 million loans which are classified as questionable or maybe crooked. So I don't think they're going to be able to nail all of them, but it was so brazen. And the folks who set up the programs, the politicians who voted for it, have no excuse for this kind of utter recklessness with tax dollars.
I mean, just in Chicago, to give you, you know, an order of magnitude, I mean, you gave us an order of magnitude with more than 2 million nationally. Chicago, just these $25,000 and under loans, which is, you know, what I think a lot of people... obviously, a lot of the loans are legitimate, but I think a lot of people, the scamsters, the fraudsters, the thieves also saw, you know, don't get too greedy. If you stay in the $25,000 range, they're never going to look at it. You can get away with it. 165,348 Chicagoans received PPP loans under $25,000. Oh, and, you know, $25,000 here, $25,000 there, $25,000 165,000 times, and you're talking about almost $3 billion.
Yeah, well, this is typical for how the program worked nationwide, and the feds just had an absolute lack of due diligence, but it was designed that way. It was like, okay, they simply didn't care about the waste. It wasn't their money. The politicians were acting like Santa Claus, but it's a standard... standards have changed since in the last few decades. This is so insanely reckless that I don't think you would have seen this even 30 or 40 years ago. But it was like there was a geyser, and it wasn't, you know, the members of Congress and the political appointees, you know, they just wanted to have nice headlines about how they were solving problems and helping the downtrodden or whatever. But unfortunately, we're being hit by the backlash now with the federal debt, driving up the credit markets, the roaring inflation, and a fading mirage of prosperity from all this COVID relief BS.
You also
calls from the lockdowns.
You also, I guess, further degrade the culture in the direction of this moral hazard of government backing your play, no matter what your play is. If things go wrong, or if I make a decision and I don't like the consequences. Say, for example, with my choice of colleges and associated tuition, then the government, I've got the government as the backstop. If now this is a little bit different with people's businesses being shut down by the government, of course, that's a taking as far as I'm concerned. So that's why I supported the idea in theory, although I opposed the lockdown, of course, which would have obviated the need for this program. But it was a taking, but it still just creates this idea that, you know, I can always go to the politicians to fix whatever, you know, mistakes I made.
Yeah, and there are so many different levels of fraud in these cases. I mean, I was struck looking at President Biden's excuse for his student loan bailout, and he's claiming it was necessary because of the pandemic and the COVID emergency, and that's a complete violation of federal law, how he interprets it. But that is probably the single biggest COVID fraud, but the Justice Department will never prosecute that.
Is there any chance we'd get any of the $600 billion back?
Probably hundreds of dollars will get back, yeah.
Hundreds.
Hundreds?
Maybe
really?
Even into the
wow.
Thousands. With respect to the PPP, as well as just all of the COVID funding money, the $5 trillion in COVID money generally, I mean, there have been reports that have not been amplified very much over the last 6 months or so saying, you know, of the individual relief checks, maybe between $150 billion and $300 billion of that $900 billion was stolen by both street gangs here as well as... terrorist organizations and criminal organizations around the globe. So, I mean, we're not just talking about, we're talking about the PPP, but we're also talking about all of the other component parts of that $5 trillion in funny money.
Right. There was horrendous fraud in the unemployment program. because they didn't do any verification. There was one guy who got unemployment benefits in 29 different states. There were a lot of unemployment payments sent to Nigeria.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And as we said, too, I mean, the city of Joliet, you've got inmates using, we find from the Joliet Police Department, using PPP money to bond out, too. Relief checks being sent to inmates as well. I mean, it just was indiscriminate. Just get everybody gets cut in so that everybody, you know, more or less goes along with the program. And then, you know, we'll deal with the inevitable consequences after the fact. But we want to save lives and livelihoods, be able to repeat that line. And we're hearing it from these same COVIDian lockdown politicians. We had a gubernatorial debate last night in Illinois. And you heard exactly that phrase from Governor Pritzker, one of the worst offenders when it comes to COVIDian policy. One of the only governors in the country who was still issuing emergency executive orders on a monthly basis related to COVID. But it's all saving lives and livelihoods. Pay no attention to what the actual outcomes are.
Yeah, and it's sad that the media has let almost all the politicians get away with that line of crap. Because it was politicians devastated the Constitution, devastated our liberties, and there were still more than 200 million Americans who contracted COVID. They had all these lockdowns that were designed to achieve zero COVID. You know, 200 million cases, lockdowns didn't work so well.
He is James Bovard, member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, frequent contributor to The Hill and contributing editor for The American Conservative. James, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's getting rougher on the CTA. You know, after that red line attack, we're going to have...
wine bottle?
Yeah, we're going to have... I know Teal Hardeman's violence interrupters are out there. We talked to him about that, but police were going to redouble their presence. At least that's what we heard from the brass, right?
They were bringing a canine unit on, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that are, you know, they're not armed, but they have a dog.
Well, it's getting worse. Now Jesus Christ is committing crimes on the CTA.
What?
Which is, you know,
hey,
that's not how I expected the... the rapture to go.
Bring JC into this.
A man who reportedly dressed somewhat like Jesus Christ punched a woman in the mouth while... I mean, it's not funny, but...
But yet you laugh.
Well, just
well do you have a picture of Jesus over there?
We're... I mean... This is crazy town. It's beyond Gotham at this point.
Yeah.
A man reportedly dressed somewhat like Christ punched a woman in the mouth while riding a CTA train in Lincoln Park yesterday morning. The victim was seated on the Brown Line when the man punched her in the mouth without provocation.
Uh-huh.
She had difficulty speaking due to her injury. She may have broken jaw, but she was taken to a hospital. Yeah. Wonder if anybody rendered aid on the Brown Line or just sat there and watched. Like this guy. CPS security guard watched as a man beat and robbed a 16-year-old outside an Edgewater school. Edgewater. Lincoln Park, Edgewater.
That's a pretty nice neighborhood.
The suburbs. Are you ready? You ready for the purge? Suburbanites with your heads in the clouds? Prosecutors say a CPS security guard looked on while a parolee, beat and robbed a 16-year-old boy outside an Edgewood school on Tuesday morning this week. Other school employees eventually intervened in the attack. The prosecutor said the people who detained the attacker let him go as police arrived.
Oh, that's...
A hurry.
Oh, why? Because they believe in redemption. He apologized for it.
What? He was only found after he allegedly threatened someone else in the neighborhood.
Why would they let him go?
Because they don't like police. Charged with robbery and aggravated battery in a public place. Robbery, aggravated battery, parolee. Can't use the fact that he's a convicted felon, I assume, since he was in prison. Can't use that against him. And aggravated battery, that's a non-detainable offense. This guy gets turned right around on January 1 under the Safety Act, whether it's in Chicago or Wheaton. Is it starting to register? Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Oh, boy. The federal government is always the last to know, particularly when it comes to a member of the royal political left. Bombshell story by the Amazon Post yesterday that Hunter Biden could be charged with tax evasion and violation of federal gun laws. Oh, really? Yeah, I know. We know.
Yeah, you just catching on, people?
Federal agents investigating Hunter Biden believe they have for months had enough evidence to charge the first son with tax crimes, as well as for lying about his drug use so he could buy a gun. This Amazon Post's dogged reporters. The final decision as to whether or not to bring the case against Hunter will be made by Delaware U.S. Attorney David Weiss, who's a Trump appointee, actually. And so, if he is charged just with tax evasion and violation of federal gun laws for lying on the application for purchase, saying he, you know, was not a drug user when the world knows otherwise.
And there's laptop videos to prove it, too.
Yeah.
Loves that crack.
Then maybe you can minimize the damage to Biden Inc. You can pretend that we have a justice system that is blind as to politics, but at the same time minimize the damage to Biden Inc. And, of course, cut Hunter off from the chairman, Mr. 10%, the big guy, President Biden. Is that what the feds may do? For more on this, pleased to be joined by George Perry, former federal and state prosecutor out east, Philadelphia way, regular contributor to the American Spectator. He blogs at knowledgeisgood.net. George, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Happy to be with you.
So the investigation that was kicked off in 2018 on Hunter apparently included, I mean, allegedly included, I should say, questions about his overseas forays with Ukrainian oligarchs and Chinese communists, and whether or not he was in violation of money laundering laws in dealing in foreign countries. But the report is focused on his own tax filings and, you know, the gun application, which, of course, is also limited to him. So what do you sort of see afoot here with this report that I assume was sanctioned by the FBI in the Amazon Post?
Well, I think it's a prelude to political theater. Look, first of all, the U.S. attorney who has been in charge of this, theoretically in charge of this investigation, this Trump appointee, Mr. Weiss, he was appointed U.S. attorney by the Trump administration on the recommendation of the two Democrat senators from Delaware.
Yeah, good point.
So I'm not looking at this guy as anyone who is, you know, independent of the Biden political machine. Nothing in politics and public life in Delaware is independent of the Biden political machine. But now, all of these years later, the gigantic Justice Department elephant is about to give birth to a pea, which is a criminal tax case against Hunter Biden and an illegal purchase of a firearm case. Meanwhile, nobody's talking about the millions of dollars that were fed to the Biden family through Hunter and his companies in Ukraine and in communist China. And that's just being bypassed. And so what they're going to do, I predict, there's going to be a negotiated deal, plea deal, on criminal tax charges and on this firearms purchase. Quite likely for no time at all, or if there's any kind of penalty, it'll be in a rehab facility or something silly like that. And the Justice Department is going to stand up and say, look at how strong and independent we were.
Right.
And the White House is going to say, hey, we didn't interfere. No, without fear nor favor, we let them go ahead. And look, they took down the president's kid. What more do you want from us?
Yeah, but
meanwhile,
Well, the Justice Department, they falsely called. Well, they kept saying the Hunter Biden laptop story was Russian disinformation. So yeah. Are they going to have a mea culpa and come out and say, you know, we were wrong? There was more to this than we thought. Or we tried Absolutely. To alter the 2020 election by burying the story.
Listen, they're not going to admit to any of that. I mean, if you look at the interviews that Tony Bobulinski, who is one of the partners with the Bidens in their dealings in China, if you look what that guy is saying,
yep.
Not only did the FBI bury the Hunter Biden laptop story, Bobulinski, throughout the run-up to the 2020 election, wanted to go public with the information that he had. But he was assigned to an FBI agent out of the Washington field office, a man named Tebow. And he was told, look, keep your mouth shut. We're investigating this. Justice will be done. And so Bobulinski keeps his mouth shut. And then what happens? Well, it turns out Tebow was one of the people behind labeling the laptop story as Russian disinformation. And then unbeknownst to Bobulinski, Tebow resigns from the FBI.
Right. This is the point that Bobulinski made in his interview with Tucker Carlson this week about why he's coming forward again after he came forward before the 2020 election on Tucker. And then that interview was ignored and the New York Post story was spiked and they did everything they could. And, of course, he makes the argument that the FBI threw the election to Biden, given that it was a 21,000 vote spread over three states effectively. But something about this, though, if you're mm-hmm. right that they plead this out and cut Hunter out of the family business. So this is a Hunter problem. It's not a Biden Inc. problem. Here's to me, it seems, the problem with that. So if he pleads guilty to tax evasion, then how does Joe Biden avoid being accused and properly prosecuted for tax evasion at minimum? Because Hunter has said, we have it, that he is paying the family bills. Biden has said, I didn't have anything to do with this business. Certainly I wasn't being compensated. If you don't have anything to do with this business, you're not being compensated. But Hunter says he was. So if he was, he didn't report that income. So how does he avoid a prosecution on the same charges at minimum?
Well, you're assuming that we're dealing with a legitimate investigation, an honest investigation. My prediction comes down to this. Everything you said is true. And Biden clearly, the president, is clearly implicated in the tax evasion, just at a minimum. But I'm saying that we do not have a Justice Department that would come close to doing the kind of investigation that needs to be done to build a case against Joe Biden or any other member of the Biden family. I mean, they're going to try and cap it with, look, we took down Hunter Biden. What more do you want? We're heroes.
Right. Right. No, I mean, I think that's right. But it seems to me that they have, you know, they're going to have more difficult questions that they'll dutifully ignore about how this ends with Hunter Biden, given what Hunter Biden has provided to the world in terms of information that has probative value that should be explored by law enforcement.
To have difficult questions to answer requires, in the first instance, someone who's going to ask those questions.
Yeah, well, that's
and nobody in the legacy media is going to do that. This has been a non-event. I mean, look. Just look at what's going on right now in Ukraine. Okay, Russia invaded Ukraine. That was terrible. But the question I've had from day one with our response to what's going on over there, all the billions that we've sent over there, we have the potential of Joe Biden sleepwalking us into a nuclear war over Ukraine. And that's been from day one. Has anybody asked the question, what did the Ukrainians think they were getting for the millions that they fed to the Biden family? How has that affected our policy towards Ukraine? You got communist China talking about invading Taiwan and rattling sabers over there. Has anybody in the corporate media asked the question, well, what did the Chinese think they were getting for those millions? And what have they, in fact, gotten for those millions? It seems to me these are vital questions that need to be asked and need to be answered, and nobody is asking them.
Well, weren't they paying for access to then Vice President Biden?
Sure, sure, and they got it. They got it.
But
look, mm-hmm. Joe Biden, if you go by the Philadelphia definition of an honest politician, Joe Biden is an honest politician. And that means once he's bought, he stays bought.
That's right. That's right.
So but isn't
that definition also works in Chicago. I want to get something else on the FBI. Because here we have again this curious, seeming unequal treatment before the law. You have the Mark Hulk case where they sent the whole battery of FBI vehicles and agents to take Mark Hulk, who's a pastor and a pro-life advocate, into custody, raided his home in rural Pennsylvania in front of his wife and kids to arrest him on charges under the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances FACE Act.
Yeah.
Now you've got the FBI arresting 11 pro-lifers who protested, did prayerful protests outside a Nashville abortion clinic. They had been charged locally with trespassing charges, but the charges were dropped and their records were expunged. They did basically praying and singing outside of a clinic. Now they're being charged with federal crimes under the FACE Act. Now, by contrast, the FBI will not share whether it has made any arrests related to attacks on pro-life centers, organizations, or Catholic churches following the leak of the opinion, the Supreme Court opinion in Dobbs. At least 83 Catholic churches and 73 pregnancy resource centers or pro-life organizations have been literally attacked, like violence, you know, demonstrable concrete violence have been attacked since the draft opinion was leaked in May. And the FBI will only tell inquiring minds, and there are not many, that a series of attacks happened and the incidents are being investigated. And they won't give them any update. It's essentially the same statement they gave back in May. So they're not making so much progress there, but they're making great progress arresting, raiding homes and arresting mostly senior citizens who pray and or sing outside of abortion clinics.
Well, look, it's perfectly clear that the FBI has become the law enforcement arm of the Democrat Party. I mean, any notion that the FBI is the fierce and independent agency that it once was, and I say this with great sorrow because I worked with the FBI for many years. I have a lot of friends who are in the FBI who will no longer acknowledge in public that they ever worked at the place. The FBI is a disgrace as it's presently being run. Yeah. They go in with guns drawn. I mean, look what they did to Roger Stone. They even had frogged men in a helicopter attack Roger Stone's house for a case where all they had to do was pick up the phone and ask him to come in and surrender, and he would have done it. You know, back in my day, when we would go out to make arrests of monsters, we'd set up two-man teams. They'd go up, they'd knock on the door and say, "Hey, Vito, get in the car." Okay. But now it's the SWAT team. With barking dogs and tear gas if necessary, and AR-15 rifles.
Well, pro-life pastors present, you know, much more of a clear and present danger than mob bosses. Of course, everyone knows that.
Of course. Well, but they're sending a message. It's not just directed at the pro-life pastor. It's being directed at all of us. This is what could happen to you if you don't do what we want. What the Democrat Party wants you to do. And anybody who dares to stand up and oppose the Democrat Party or any of its political masters, this is what's going to happen to you, too. So take note, America. This is waiting for you. It's a disgrace.
What's your view on Biden's latest October surprise? That's the pardoning of low-level drug offenses and offenders.
Well, it's purely political, but it goes beyond. Let me point this out. It goes beyond just pardoning people who have been convicted of possession of marijuana. The White House also says that there will be no further prosecutions for federal prosecutions for possession of marijuana. So just like Biden has tried to rewrite the student loans He's rewriting the criminal code by decriminalizing, in effect, the possession of marijuana. That's something that only the legislature can do. But Biden, the king, is going to do it himself. So it's a political move. I mean, John Fetterman, our pretend blue-collar Democrat candidate for Senate in Pennsylvania, called on Biden to do this. And, you know, when Biden announced it, Fetterman goes before the media and says, this is, because he's a blue-collar guy, he says, this is a DFD, standing for Big Effing Deal, and a massive step towards justice. So it's calculated to give the Democrats a boost in the upcoming midterm elections because, let's face it, the stoner generation, which came of age in the 60s, we're now senior citizens. And I'm sure they've taken the temperature as to how people feel about the legalization of the possession of marijuana. And I'm guessing they're doing the political calculation that it's going to be something advantageous to them.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Fetterman, do you expect before November 8th that that dancing lizard from the end of Spaceballs is going to pop out of the back of his neck and do a little song with a cane and a hat?
Do you think he'll ever take off the hoodie?
Little putting on the Ritz?
Yeah.
What is going on with that dude? He's like a Cro-Magnon man. I mean, I'm sorry he has some health issues, but...
bizarre.
But that doesn't mean he should be elevated to the U.S. Senate, if that is an elevation anymore. I don't know.
Fetterman hasn't spoken in public because he's had a stroke. And he's finally agreed to debate Dr. Oz, who is his Republican opponent.
Yeah, we're
but the first debate won't happen until well into the voting here in Pennsylvania. We have mail-in voting.
Yeah.
Of course. And by the way, Fetterman, whatever Fetterman lacks in support among the electorate here in Pennsylvania, he's slightly ahead in the polls, but you can never tell about the polls in Pennsylvania. Whatever Fetterman lacks in true political support, we have the Democrat Party down in Philadelphia ready to manufacture ballots at a moment's notice. The same rules that applied in the 2020 election, presidential election in Pennsylvania, apply today. And that means mail-in ballots don't need to be signed. They don't need to be dated. And you can just bring them in and dump them on the desk, and they're going to get counted, which is what happened in 2020.
Yeah, well, then Pennsylvania, one of the states that didn't reform its ways, so the protocols will just keep counting until we get to the number we want, right?
Exactly.
We'll see. We'll see. George Perry, former federal and state prosecutor, regular contributor to the American Spectator, and he blogs at knowledgeisgood.net. George, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Glad to be with you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
I'm a hard working man. I wear a steel hard hat. I can ride rope, a hammer and paint.
Welcome back to Chicago's Morning Answer. Amy Jacobson here. Dan Proft is somewhere in the building. We don't know where, but he will be joining us soon. This is his walk-up song. I'm talking about State Senator Darren Bailey, who I thought killed it last night in the debate. And I liked it when he made a pledge to Governor Pritzker.
I want to make sure that you understand something, everyone out there. I want to make a commitment to the people right now while we have time, because that I want to commit to you that when I get elected as governor, that I'm going to serve all 4 years of my term, that I promise you I will not be running for another elected office. I've signed the People's Pledge promising that I'll do that. And Governor Pritzker, I want to ask you if you're interested in signing that same pledge to commit
right,
that
Senator.
You won't run for another office while you are a governor. And a matter of fact, I have the pledge right here if you're interested in signing that.
All right, audience, we need you to remain
calm
quiet.
Down.
We need you to...
Senator,
Jennifer and I will ask the questions here, but it is a relevant topic.
We're going to do a quick pivot. We're going to move back because we're in control here. But, Governor, it is worth asking. You've raised your national profile quite a bit, raising funds for Democrats in other states and by traveling to New Hampshire. These moves have stoked speculation you might run for president in 2024. It is fair to ask, will you commit to serving a full term if reelected? 30 seconds, sir.
I intend to serve 4 years more as governor and get reelected, and I intend to support the president. He's running for reelection.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, what do you expect him to say? If Biden is not going to run for president, and then if he were reelected, he's going to be in the mix and run for president. Of course, that's what he's going to do. That's what he's been setting up. Everybody knows that. And in terms of the answer, say, well, I intended to serve, but then Biden vacated the office, and so I felt compelled, called by the volunteers to. So, you know the game. The point is, the larger point is, don't allow him to be reelected. He shouldn't be reelected. Vote to de-elect him based on the performance in this first 4 years, not what he may or may do prospectively in the next four. I thought this was a telling moment, too, this in terms of just who this guy is and his character. It was the issue of revisiting the income tax increase on Illinoisans that he proposed and that was rejected by the voters. Well, it was a good idea, right? Would you do it again? And this is what he said.
Moving Illinois from a flat tax income system to a graduated one, is that something that you would pursue in a second term? Will you revisit that?
No, but I do believe that wealthier people should not reap all the benefits and working people getting the shaft. I have, in fact, worked to make our tax system fairer.
So if that's the case right now, and that was why you proposed it 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I guess now, then why wouldn't you propose it again if you were reelected? If it was a good idea then,
why
isn't it a good idea now? If that's a good idea to make the rich pay more, according to you, it's not true, but if it's a good idea, because everybody's going to pay more, good idea then, why is it not a good idea now? Oh, because you're running for re-election right now? Because there's an election 30 days away? Sort of the gas tax doubling, but, you know, incremental temporary suspension of the inflationary increase so that you can claim tax relief. Property taxes go up by the thousands. You get a $100 rebate check, and they call that tax relief. Yeah, that's the fraud that needs to continue to be exposed. And there's just one fraud after another as you go topic to topic to topic. For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined by Darren Bailey, State Senator Darren Bailey, the Republican nominee for governor. Darren, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's an honor to be with you. Thank you. Yeah, it seems like no, but yes. That seems to be his answer to everything. We cannot trust this man, and we found that out last night.
You know, at the end of the debate, in your closing statement, you said, I mean, you sort of, I mean, it's 30 seconds, so we'll give you a little bit more time here to explicate. You said two things. One is, you know, I may be a little bit different. I got a southern twang. I don't sound like all of you urbane sophisticates up in Chicago. And I want you to develop that a little bit more. The second thing you said, and then your time ran out, was that J.B. Pritzker is a dangerous man. And I want you to develop both of those tracks that you were on in your close.
Well, thank you very much, because of the noise, and it was a little hard hearing for us up on the stage, and when she said it was, you know, closing comments, it caught me a little bit off guard, and so I think there's a obvious difference to be made between J.B. Pritzker and I. You know, and interestingly enough, there are people across the state, and I've run into them, there are people that are supporting me that want me to be someone different than I am, that think I need to dress differently. I've had people literally suggest that I take speech classes to get rid of the Southern dialect.
Yeah.
And you know, that's all right. People have their view of what a governor should be, but I guess I sat and I look at the people that have controlled this office for years, for possibly 50 to 100 years, and that's what we've had, and it's time for something different, and that's exactly what that was all about, to get that point across, that we need someone common sense. And I think last night made that stand out very effectively. that I am of the people. This man has no clue. And I'm going to tell you, I was shocked. I was taken back last night at his lack of knowledge on the issues. He was standing over there the entire time. Every time when I would speak, he was writing things down. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what he was writing down, what he was wanting to say, but I was shocked at his inability to articulate and defend. All he could do was stand there and blame everything on Rauner and Trump and call me a liar. That's the only defense that that the man had. So no, it's obvious.
And so when you say at the end he's a dangerous man, explain that.
Well, he is, because just exactly what you just are talking about. He's injected his gender ideology into our schools. He's injected cultural responsive teaching into our schools. He's done nothing but divide us, and I think I pointed that out very well last night. That's all he does. There's no uniting anyone. If you're a Republican, you're bad. If you don't think like him, you're bad. And this man is not going to work with anybody like that. And that's what's so dangerous. That's what Joe Biden's doing from the White House. This party today, they're dividing. And it's destroying our state, and it's going to destroy our union if we allow it. And I think that's been my message, that I'll come to the table, and I'll bring everyone will have a voice, even that noisy Democrat. You will have a voice, because that's not happened at all in these last 4 years that I've witnessed.
I think WCIA TV anchor Jennifer Roscoe did an amazing job, and she kept saying, you know, Governor, now's your chance. What specific changes would you make to the Safety Act? She asked him not once, but twice, and he didn't say it. He never answered the question.
Yeah, I was very pleased with the performance of the anchors. They were fair. I don't know that I experienced that in the primary debate with WGN, but you're exactly right. They weren't letting anyone off the hook. And so he says he'll go back and make changes, but
what?
Like I said, again, no, but yes, yes, but no. So
yeah, clarifications, generically clarifications, because he perfectly understands the law, and those 102 county state's attorneys you mentioned, they don't understand the Safety Act, and all the sheriffs who are saying we're going to have to significantly empty out our jails if this goes into effect on Jan. 1, they don't understand. Nobody understands the law except him. That's why everybody's got it wrong except him. And I thought that's an effect that, and you sort of said during the debate, what the police don't know what they're doing, ? I think it's a very difficult position for him to defend credibly, that he knows what the law says and what its implications are, and everybody who's professional law enforcement around the state that are decrying it do not.
No, it's exactly right. And it's, again, that's how you destroy society. You allow it, make it become lawless, and that is exactly what's happening. And you know, the reality is, this man, at any given moment, he has the supermajority. At any moment, he could call session in and correct and rectify anything that he's talking about that he'll take a look at, yet he's refused to. I've called him out. We called him to do this even before session, regular session, was let out. You're making a mistake. Let's work on this. Let's fix this. But obviously, you know, the people didn't understand all that was involved. And now that the truth is getting out there, thanks to those false newspapers that have nothing but fact in them, which he decries, now that the truth is getting out there, people are waking up. And as they wake up, they're appalled. And I think the one thing that we learn from this is that we have got to be more involved and educated in what government is doing on a daily basis. Quit paying so much attention to what's going out in Washington, D.C., and pay attention to what is coming out of Springfield, because all of the issues over the last 4 years are the issues that business and people are leaving and fleeing this state from. So I think that's the one thing that we've learned from this process.
Now, Pritzker keeps saying that you voted to defund police. Can you just explain it to everyone what's really going on?
Golly, yes.
You just won't let that go.
They injected that in part of the budget. That's what they do. They work the wee hours on some of these bills, these standalone bills and ideas, most of which, this was a good thing, to throw a bone out to the police. And I think it was $80 million to supposedly help recruit and train police. Now, mind you, at the same a year ago, the villages and sheriff's departments across the state, they lost their ability for training. They all January 1st came and went of 2021, and they sent their police to get trained, and when they came back, they got a bill for it, and they found out that had been removed from the budget. So he was willing to, you know, interject some of that back in to say that, hey, I'm helping to hire police and train them, but oh well, they don't have the power to do their jobs. Well, that was in the budget. I voted against that budget because it was just an over-the-top spending bill. It is not balanced, period. But at the same time, Senate Republicans came out with an additional bill of $125 million, a standalone bill to fund the police and offer them more. And, of course, that didn't even make it into committee.
Yeah, the balanced budget, the credit rating upgrades, this is all, phony baloney budgeting, and these credit rating agencies are, you know, complicit like they were before the 08 crash in not looking at things honestly. This is all COVID money related. So it's temporary. It's fleeting. You're not going to get $180 billion drop shipped to the state every year like you have over the last 12 months in Illinois and for the rest of the country with all the funny money the Fed's printed. So once all that money washes through, you're going to see what's left up on shore, and it will go right back to unpaid bills and increasingly unfunded pension liabilities. That's the fact. And I think that needs to be really driven home, too, since he's advertising this propaganda on TV.
No, that's right. And $180 billion injected into our economy in Illinois, $20 billion literally handed to the governor's office, of which he's still sitting on a lot of that. We need to understand that. And so in a year ago, let's not forget, he borrowed $7.5 billion from the Federal Reserve, the only governor in the nation to borrow money from the Federal Reserve. That's got to be paid back.
Yeah, that was a good point.
$20 billion that he had. Yeah, really, this $20 billion that he had, he's creating new programs. I'm talking to people all the time about mental health issues, and people don't even understand where to go and to get help. And instead of building up the resources and the agencies that we currently have, he uses this new money to create new agencies and new avenues of spending almost. And I'm seeing some of that as we're on the streets in Chicago. I'm running across a lot of small opportunities that have popped up over the years because of this new spending. So we need accountability, we need transparency, and we need to shrink the size of government and become more efficient with what we have operating already.
And some of the specific proposals to improve the climate in Illinois, both on the growth side as well as on the affordability side, things like the affordability of college, which you guys got into a bit, but talk a couple of specifics in those categories. I know you've talked about a hard cap on property taxes like our friends to the east in Indiana have. Talk about that and other things you have in mind.
Well, so property taxes, I want to make sure that everyone understands again that when Governor Pritzker ran for office, he promised to create a commission to come up with ways of lowering property taxes. And of course, his commission did absolutely nothing. And we have to remember this Amendment 1 is going to raise our property taxes. That's fact. That's going to happen. So yes, we can allow a PTEL caps of 5% or the cost of inflation, whichever is less. We can put a cap on all government agencies. Truth in taxation. I'm going to institute that to make sure. And that's what we did on the North Platte School Board. You hear all this time about O'Bailey raised taxes when he was on the school board. Well, I'll tell you what, our people are the ones that they said, yes, this is what we want, because we went to them with the truth in taxation. And another idea, we can give the voters the ability to lower their taxes up to 10% per year via referendum. So that's it. And if we stop all this unfunded mandates, if we stop telling schools, communities, for instance, telling the communities that your police officers, you have to wear body cams, but I'm sorry, but you have to pay for them. You have to do more training, but you have to pay for that. And oh, by the way, no cash bail. When you yank that out from the every 101 at least counties across the state, what do you think is going to happen? If they're going to keep their courthouses open, the property taxes are going up. So we've got to get state government out of the way. And a lot of these, we just got to shrink and get state government out of the way, because that's what's happened. That's why our property taxes have increased, and that's why they're going to continue to increase over the next few years if we don't rein this back in.
On the issue of the affordability of college, there's some time spent on that. Seems to me that, you know, the real weakness that Pritzker and the entire ruling class has is Illinois exports more of its college-bound high school seniors than every state in the nation except for New Jersey. So we're 49th in keeping college-bound kids home is effectively what it is. And U of I, which he's like talking about with all these wonderful things and people are staying in and the freshman class is up, that's all nonsense. The U of I has the second highest tuition in the Big Ten and the lowest level of indigenous in-state students there. It seems to me we should be talking about hard capping U of I's tuition at like the median tuition in the Big Ten and mandating that something on the order of 80% or more, whatever the median is, say, in the Big Ten, I'd be fine with that as a starting point. At least it would raise it, would be Illinois families, in-state residents, because that's the charge of a land-grant university to serve the families in the state.
No, and that's exactly right. The last 2 years in the Senate, I've sat on the Higher Education Committee, and I viewed that firsthand. I mean, you know, they wanted to pose the question, which Governor Pritzker wouldn't even answer as well. Would you look at free community college a tuition? That's what. Why are you asking that whenever we have such exorbitant fees for our four-year university? So Pritzker would not answer that. But yes, we do have some serious problems. I've sat for 2 years straight in the Senate, and I've listened to these budget requests come in, and they just continue to grow, and all while they continue to seemingly hire administrators. They're not hiring teachers and professors. They're not offering us the research that once made these universities great. But we do have some dire problems, and we have got to become an Illinois first mentality for our children. It's interesting. Two things that I learned while sitting on this committee is that the president of Governor State, her daughter goes to Purdue, and the president of SIU, her daughter goes to out to North Carolina. So, I mean, that and all, and I raised that question when that, matter of fact, I might have asked it. I don't remember. But that's pretty telling in and of itself. We've got a lot of work to do, and I think that needs to be one of the priorities, is to rein in administrative spending. There's no reason why President Killian and U of I should be making $1 million almost, and I'm sure he's making more than that with his benefits tagged on to that. But there's no way in the world that you can explain that, no way whatsoever, for a public university such as U of I.
He is Darren Bailey. He's the state senator and Republican nominee for Governor. BaileyForIllinois.com is the website for more information on his candidacy. Darren, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys. Bless you. Have a great week.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the September jobs numbers out, 263,000 new jobs, which beats street estimates. But I don't even know why we talk about this number anymore. It feels like it's just inertia, like we're imitating the investotainment goofs on CNBC, because this number doesn't mean anything. It doesn't tell us anything. So what you have is sort of just mystics who interpret this number to whatever political economic ends they desire to see. What matters, unfortunately, are the central bankers and the kleptocrats and what they're up to. Those rent seekers that really are turning the dials and pulling the switches, it seems to me. But that's just me. I'm not an expert in the field. That's just my handle on it from, you know, being a small investor like so many people and trying to figure it out and listening to these different voices and trying to discern who is making sense and who is operating on the level and who isn't. One of the guys we know that operates on the level and makes a lot of sense is James Perry, which is why we have him on the show. And he joins us now, Senior Vice President and Partner at Arbor Research. Jim, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Good morning.
Morning. So am I wrong about that, or do you place a lot of weight on the monthly jobs numbers these days?
I don't place a lot of weight on the monthly job numbers. In the investment world, really, things are about trend, right? And this number that we got today, which was, you know, 263,000 new jobs, is lower than it was last month at 315. And funny enough, it's actually the lowest number of the year, right? The stimulus uptick back in 2020, I think 1.6 million jobs were created, the top number that year. Last year it was 770, and this year it was about 700 was the high print, but we haven't had a number above 500 for 5 or 6 months now. So the jobs number really is trending downward. What this number does, though, it really makes it easier for the Fed to hike because their number one priority is inflation.
And we expect another 75-point basis hike before the month's out, right?
Absolutely. There's a euro-dollar futures curve, which is slightly esoteric, but the point is that the market is betting right this minute there's an 88% chance of a 75 basis point hike. That number was at 80% before the number, and it was at 70 2 days ago, and it was just above 50% last week. So anything above 50%, the Fed has always gone to the prescribed number. So plus 75, the odds are 9 out of 10.
And what does that say in terms of where we expect inflation to be this month? What are CPI and PPI going to look like?
Right. Well, you know, last month, CPI came in at 8.3%, right? High, I think, was 8.5 a month or two ago. You're going to get a number that's above 8, right? And that's the problem. The Fed has created inflation. The government has created inflation. And it's still too high, and it's not showing any signs of easing right now.
And you're thinking about this some more, then what will the impact of the rate hike be? I mean, so much of this has already been baked in terms of reaction, right? I mean, do we then expect the market to just continue to trend lower, even with the little sort of mini burst recovery the first couple of days of this week?
Right. Well, you know, that's a big question, and that's a million-dollar question. You know, the fact is, just taking a little step back, remember that the pandemic has allowed the government to print $10 trillion, right, in a little over 2 years. $10 trillion, right? So the Fed's balance sheet's 9, and fiscal stimulus was another 5. So everybody's portfolios have done well over the last 10 years as the Fed has printed money. And now you're bumping up to the top of the ceiling where the bond market's not allowing you to just print at your will to please the government, right? I mean, they always say that history is written by the winners and the narrative is always presented by the people in power, right? So the people in power believe that inflation is priority number one. So not only does the Fed do it, but the administration agrees as well. So that makes a job easier for the Fed. The problem is the stock market really isn't priced for a recession yet. And that's a big problem. I was looking at something last night that was sort of interesting to me, just to give you a little sort of sense of where we were. There's this great sector of the stock market called the garbage collection, which is the profitless stocks. And there's a lot of them, and they track them. So back in 2001, profitless stocks, the garbage collection, dropped 80%, right? And in the great financial crisis, 2007, they dropped 70%. And now they're only down 50%. So at the very least, those profitless stocks have probably got another 25% in them on the downside. And frankly, we haven't even gotten back down to the pre-pandemic highs in the S&P. That's another 10 or 15% from here. So just being kind of logical and normal, the market needs to price itself for a recession because that's what you're going to have.
So you're a buyer of this notion that we're going to either continue to see negative growth and that we haven't hit the earnings recession yet, that's going to tank the market further.
Correct. I mean, we'll know more, obviously, in the next 2 or 3 weeks when the earnings reports for Q3 start coming in. The profit margins are falling. I mean, if you talk to small businesses and large businesses and households.
Well, that's what happens when costs increase, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, the number one problem is everybody's facing higher costs on everything they do, whether it's putting food on their tables, putting gasoline in their cars, or, you know, keeping their factories or small businesses going. Prices for doing business are going up, and profit margins are falling.
You wait till people get their home heating bills.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be, yeah. I mean, we've only had a few days where we had to turn the heat on, and I got my bill, and I'm like, this is not a sustainable system.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, Amy. I mean, you're right. I mean, look outside. The leaves are green, you know.
Well, it's so bad in Chicago that on the way here, they're asking... The gas company is asking people to check on their neighbors who might not be able to pay their bills during the winter months to make sure that they're okay.
Yeah, I mean...
That's a bad sign.
That's a bad sign.
And Illinois is tracking to be a net exporter of energy, despite what the governor said at last night's debate, tracking to be a net exporter of energy when we have been... a net importer of energy when we have been a net exporter. So we're going to need to buy energy from outside the state when we currently do not need to because of his green energy policies by the end of the decade. And that's a report out from energy sector analyst that was reported in Cranes a couple of weeks ago. He lied about it last night, but, you know, the reality, he can lie about the reality all he wants. That's what he does. But that's where we're trending.
Yeah. I mean, you know, oil is at $90 a barrel. And, you know, Dan and Amy, we've talked about this before, you know, a barrel of gasoline was $30 a barrel the day Biden took office. And that was at 90 before the Russian incursion into the Ukraine. And it's still here. And now, doesn't seem like the administration has much bargaining power with anybody, including OPEC. But, you know, the biggest problem is we are still producing something like 3 million barrels a day less today than we were 2.5 years ago. That's ridiculous when we've got the largest supply of recoverable deposits in the world. We've got enough energy in this country to power us for 200 years.
But yeah, we're going to go to Venezuela and ask them. I'm sure we're going to buy their oil.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's almost comical. I mean, if it wasn't so tragic, it would be comical.
It's not energy we lack, it's brain power.
Yes.
At least in the decision making. Yes. So, you know, you set out an interesting missive to your subscribers. I'm happy to be one this week, and it's going to be something you said before, but it was really, really illustrated. The tracking the increase in the money supply with the performance of the S&P, and you see it ride up with the increase of the money supply, and you see it ride down with money supply now contracting. And so this is when people mention the Fed trying to figure out the soft landing. This is what they're trying to figure out, how they manipulate the money supply so that they reduce inflation on some defined schedule without completely tanking the market. And it seems like the slow walk is only extending the pain.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Dan. I mean, you know, what's changed since the pandemic is that we've all become global macro investors, right? Like, we know about the Bank of England and the ECB and the Bank of Japan. And the reason for it is these guys control such a massive amount of printed money that has distorted economic activity around the globe. And now they're all pulling it back. And when that happens, you know, if history is our guide, and it should be, and there's economic statistics about this going back something like to the, you know, 850 years or something like that. When money supply goes down, risk assets follow. And when money supply goes up, risk assets rise. And the trouble is, you've got two different sort of competing, you know, groups of people. One is the real economy and one is Wall Street. And Wall Street loves the bull market, right? So they're always talking stocks up, profit margins are holding in there. And again, the narrative is the ones with the power, and they've got some. But the fact is that, you know, the stock market's in trouble. It's going down. I mean, you know, inflation's going up, interest rates are going up, liquidity is going down, volatility is going up, and risk premiums have to rise. And investors know that. I mean, the flows of money out of the bond market has been phenomenal. Again, you know, cash is king here. Money market funds got something like $88 billion in the last reporting period. Bonds were down for the 10th week in a row, and stocks are down for 7 out of the last 9. So, you know, investors know that risks are rising. And you can see the spreads in my market, you know, on the institutional side. It's really hard to get bond trades done. So we've got some work to do here, and it's not going to be fun for everybody in the investment world.
Do you see a burgeoning revolt against the ESG, environmental social governance, orthodoxy that people like Larry Fink at BlackRock are trying to impose on corporate America? I note this because of a development in Louisiana where the state treasurer there, John Schroeder, penned a letter to the aforesaid Larry Fink saying the state of Louisiana is liquidating all BlackRock investments within 3 months over a period of time to divest nearly $800 million from the bank's money market funds, mutual funds, or ETFs because of Larry Fink's promotion of green energy policies that would destroy Louisiana's economy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was born in Louisiana, right? So it's a big oil producing state, and I follow it pretty closely. And I lived in Florida, and I follow that one pretty closely, too. So Louisiana did that. Florida went the opposite way with DeSantis, right? And I think it's one of those things, Dan and Amy, that, you know, the ESG revolt is coming. I mean, people know it's been an economic disaster. It's the narrative is a nice one. The revolt, though, will be a silent one. You can't come out too loudly and say, I know you don't really have an electric car. It's a battery-powered car. And those batteries have to be recharged with, you know, electricity that's burned with coal. Now, if you want to deny that truth, that's your option if it makes you feel good. But if you don't believe that, you can't come out and tell somebody that because they just don't want to hear it. You know, when you go to a cocktail party, you don't argue about politics, and you don't argue about religion. And when you're talking on the radio about business, you really can't argue too much about the people that believe in green energy because it's a narrative that is supported by the people who are in power. And until that changes, it has to be a silent revolt.
Now I know why I'm never invited to cocktail parties. James Perry, Senior VP and Partner at Arbor Research. Jim, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Dan, thank you very much. Amy, have a nice weekend.
You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, just starting with last night's gubernatorial debate at Illinois State University, hosted by Nexstar, WGN, broadcast on WGN up here. The end of the debate, the last question, sort of had fun with it a little bit earlier in the program. So, you know, we'll get to the substantive stuff, too, depending on your comments, given that you... you know, that this is your segment, Open Mic Friday, taking your calls, comments, compliments, criticisms, general crack pottery. So here was the walk-up song question, and first JB and then Bailey.
Well, any song that highlights the big things that need to get done for our state is what I would suggest should be the walk-up song. We've gotten so many done over the last 4 years.
All right.
I hope
he couldn't
we'll
come up with a song.
The next...
So lame.
What? No,
more
no.
more of a waddle up song for him.
Well, when he walks from the back room to the lectern, he's normally out of breath, and I'm not making that up. And
yeah.
I've said many times he should get his castle in shape.
I've seen that, and when he does, I mean, this, I guess that's technically that could be a walk up moment, right? I mean, if he's walking from
that's
off stage to on stage,
yeah.
Well, I mean,
what's your song, man?
Could be accompanied this way.
I got a job following fat people around with a tuba.
Stop it.
Cut it out. I have a glandular problem.
Yeah. Bailey, by contrast, had an answer.
I may seem a little different than some of you. I'm a hard-working man because these young people... to preserve a future for these young people, and I am going to represent every hardworking person out there.
And the kids went crazy.
No, they did. And I know this seems, you know, contrite that, you know, Pritzker didn't know a song, but that just proves how unattached he is to everyday people. Everybody knows what their walk-up song is. What's your walk-up song again?
I
Only
alternate.
The Lonely.
I alternate. This is my sort of Pat walk-up song. It's what I have been using. So it varies depending on my mood. I'm mercurial, so it's either I either go with True Spandau Ballet, of course,
or
I go with Nazareth. It depends on how aggressive I'm feeling.
That's pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's your song? Girls Just Want to Have Fun or something?
How did you know? No, this is my song.
Yeah. Crazy Train.
I played in volleyball too.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Crazy to live here.
All right.
Deal with what things we're dealing with.
Well, we'll get into the sum and substance of the topics of the debate on, in addition to walk-up song. But we'll take more suggestions on walk-up song. Pritzker needs one. I got one. Do you? Tom, Blue Island, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan and Amy, good morning. Dan, there is a song, first about the fourth song on a 1973 Bruce Springsteen album called The Wild, the Innocent, and East Street Shuffle called Wild Billy's Circus Town. And if you hear the introduction to that song, it would be perfect for Fat Boy.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tom. We'll look that up. Get people right on that. Rick, Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. It's not what I called about, but a song. It's something, it's a big band song. I don't know if it's the name of the song or a line, but it's basically, it's He Must Be Made of Jelly because Jam Don't Shake Like That. I don't know if that's the title.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Hello. Good morning.
All right. We're going to have to effort that one, too. That's
But what I called about is, you know, that open mic that Biden was caught on where he says you don't mess with the Biden family?
Yeah.
And you got to remember, he mixed it up with corn toasty or Pop-Tart or whatever breakfast food this guy called himself. Yeah. So there might be some truth to that.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I can do one more thing real quick. That girl that called or that interviewed about wanted to transition to a guy, and now she says she's ruined.
Yeah,
there's three words that don't these people ever ask these people when they want to do that? She comes up and she says, "Hey, I want to transition to a guy." The doctor should say, "Okay, that's fine, but what if 3 years from now you get an epiphany and find out that's a bad decision? You're not going to be able to come back. It's not like returning a pair of shoes. So you might want to think about it. But don't they ever ask, but what
no,
if?
Because they want the money. It's a big
call,
business.
Rick.
$5 billion by 2030, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Billion.
If we have time, we'll replay that. Woman, it's very tough. She's very thoughtful. She's quite articulate about it. It was a painful thing that she recounted, but it's instructive, too, and it's courageous of her to put herself out there the way that she has after the catastrophic decision she made, in her own words, catastrophic decision.
Got a text message. Instead of a song, why don't you play the scene where Dr. Evil first introduces Fat Bastard as he weighs a metric ton. Mm-hmm. Remember that character?
Could do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Fat Bastard come to life. Life imitating art. Dave and Racine.
Greetings and salutations, but tune for Pritzker. Words by the Monkees, words that never were true, spoken to help nobody but you, words with lies inside, but strong enough to hide till your plan was through.
Well, very good, Dave. Not exactly.
Or dare to be stupid by Weird Al Yankovic.
Not exactly Davy Jones, but pretty good. Actually, I think this Weird Al is the better tune for his walk-up song or waddle-up song.
Eat it, eat it. Get yourself an egg and beat it. Have some more chicken, have some more.
Do we have that big band song? Jam up, no. Jelly tight. What is it? What's with the... Tommy Rowe, 1970, I'm told. I don't know this song.
I don't know.
Jam up and jelly tight.
Jam up and jelly tight. I like this.
Jam up and jelly tight. You won't say you will, but there's a chance that you might.
I dig it.
So
I dig it.
It's not jam bad. Up, jelly be tight.
What? Jam up, jelly tight. Yeah. What was it? Jam up, jelly tight. Wait, what was it? You must be made of jelly because jam don't. What was the line that we heard? I don't know. So it was good though. All right, we're gonna have to incorporate that into the repertoire. Steve, Orland Park.
Yeah, I have two quick questions. One, why didn't Darren Bailey bring up anything about Pritzker being MIA as far as all the looting downtown? Not a word about that. And two, why is not Mayor Lutefoot and Pritzker prosecuted for breaking the Constitution as far as accepting illegal aliens? That's aiding and abetting, is it not? Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Steve. The point about the 2020 riots is a good one. You need to trace it back. That was a watershed moment where the political ruling class in this state decided to turn the city of Chicago and basically the state over to people prone to violence. And because people were allowed to commit acts of violence with little consequence. So it is important to trace it back that when you turn the city over to predators, that was the predicate action leading to the Safety Act, which is, as one county prosecutor told me, was a bill written for gangbangers. And, yeah, that's exactly what we're seeing play out. Ryan, New Lenox.
Hey, Darren, Amy, thanks for taking my call. Going back to your comments around education and teachers and their performance in this state, I just want to be clear so I understand sort of how the left treats things. I'm hoping you can help me kind of square this circle. So the police as an institution are totally corrupt, need to be totally dismantled, systemic racism, this, that, and the other thing. But teachers are all good, and we can't even find one, to borrow from their position, bad apple?
Not in Chicago. Chicago, 100% of teachers have been rated proficient or excellent. 100%. And places around the state,
I mean, it
ranges from, about 97% to 100%.
Yeah, they're perfect. I mean, look at the score they got.
Thanks for the call, Ryan. Yeah, that's about right. And then when you, as the Wall Street Journal did, pick up on the data that's being gathered and reported by groups like our friends at wirepoints.com, you get this treatment from JB during the debate.
He talks about what was in the Wall Street Journal. That was provided to them by a right-wing carnival barker organization here in the state of Illinois.
Of course.
Not
the right-wing carnival barker organization. That's how he refers to wirepoints.com. The data, like the 36% of third graders that are proficient in reading that read at grade level, according to the NAEP tests, that was verbatim from the Illinois State Board of Education. His carnival barkers, his appointees. So the ISBE came back, responded to the Wall Street Journal editorial, saying that... that is essentially an unfair way to look at student achievement and school performance. Oh, it is? Well, then why do you use it? Then why do you report it? Well, why does anybody pay attention to it if it's misleading? Yeah, it's not, and people know it. Yeah. You think that K through 12 is getting the job done in Illinois? Mm-hmm. And then what do? They say, well, the schools that are performing poorly, like in Decatur and elsewhere, are underfunded. Funding has gone up at a 45-degree angle for the last 30 years. At CPS, now you're talking about basically $30,000 a kid per year.
Yeah, because people are dropping out in droves.
And I'm not saying that all makes it the way to the classroom for, you know, the benefit of the students, because the system isn't set up to do that. The system is set up to benefit the adults in charge of the system, and it does a great job of conferring salaries and benefits to the adults. It does much less proficient, if you will, at preparing children to be successful in life by aiding and abetting their intellectual development. And as the Wall Street Journal commented on in their opinion, kids don't read at grade level in third grade. They can't do word problems in fourth grade. They can't do science experiments in fifth grade. That's what's actually happening. And all this, oh, you can have to look at the context and the totality and compare and contrast three ratings versus four and five ratings in other states. I don't care about that. We should have standards of excellence that are demanded of every school district, not rationalizations for underperformance in any school district. And that's what we have with this governor and this political class. His people. The numbers. That's what was reported.
Oh, feral cats.
Marcus in Southern Illinois.
Yes. I was chiming in for the song that I have for Jamie Prescott. I'm probably dating the song. LMA Morris and Freddie Shack, Mr. 5x5.
Mr. 5x5. Very good. Yeah. That's very good.
Thanks, Marcus.
That's
for
good. I like that. All right.
A new caller.
Ralph and Rantoul.
Yes. Meow, meow.
Meow. Hey, good morning. For walkout music, as I was listening, perhaps the Baby Elephant Walk by Henry Mancini.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Amy, I have experience with feral cats.
Yeah.
Before you take them to the vet, you can't see this because it's radio. I'm using air quotes. Take it to the vet, right? Just make sure that the brick is in the pillowcase before you stuff the cat in there. Otherwise, it gets really difficult.
Aww. Oh, my.
Wow. Ralph the Executioner from Rantoul.
Wow. Yeah, that was really aggressive.
Well,
I'm going to spend $100 just to make sure he's comfortable when he transitions and he can have music of birds.
Why don't you just leave him alone and let him.
I got to dig a grave. It's hard to dig a hole in the ground.
What, is this the first time I dug a hole? What are you, Joe Pesci?
You buried your cat Angel, right?
Yeah.
In front of your tree in Wheaton or something?
Yeah.
It's a lot of physical labor.
Sort of.
What do you mean, sort of? Oh, what is, you
no, it's the backyard.
Sort of bury.
Backyard.
Oh, okay.
Backyard.
It's a little more dignified.
Rich in Indian Head Park. But but I let him go on his own terms. I didn't take him out.
You just let him die and suffer?
I didn't put the hood on and take him to the gallows like you're doing. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Yes, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I think the song that I have for Pritzker is a Kelly Clarkson song. Since I've been gone, I can breathe for the very first time.
Rich, of Richmond Indian Head Park, I am shocked that you know who Kelly Clarkson is.
Why?
I am stunned. Thanks for the call. I had no idea Rich was such
Maybe he watches her daytime show.
He's a top 40 guy. No idea. Would have never guessed that. Dan on the Southwest Side.
Yeah, you know, a crazy coincidence. On the Southwest Side, there is a family with octuplets, and their nickname was, in fact, the right-wing carnival barkers. So shout out to the Southwest Side Barker family. I didn't know they were famous.
Yeah.
If I was Pritzker, my walk-up song is easy. Peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly, peanut butter jelly. Thanks, guys.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
Kate Northfield.
I have a good one. It's for Pritzker's walk-on song. It should be Hellhole by Spinal Tap.
That's good. That's a good one. Thanks for the call, Kate. Chuck and Delavan to close it out.
Holy smokes, you're not going to believe this, but me and Pritzker finally share something in common. His song and my song are Highway to Hell. I want to tell you guys, you got the same problem down there with him. We have the same problem with our governor up here. Evers let the south side of Chicago ride the train up to Kenosha and lay siege to that city for 3 days. And not one person was brought in for any of the burning or looting. So in your state's not the only one that surrendered to this whole thing. You guys have a great weekend.
Thanks, Chuck.
Stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.